Hi, Sammy.
Hi, Caitlin.
We've had many conversations over our
almost 12 years.
12-year friendship.
Yeah.
Now we've got some cameras.
Yep.
But I'm excited to be here.
Thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. So for the rest of the folks that will be watching this, why don't you explain who you are, why you're here today?
All right. So, Sammy Trujillo. I am a faith consultant for the HVTN. That's the HIV Vaccine Trials Network. And our purpose for 2022 is to explore and educate on HIV and COVID, the similarities and the differences and the general struggles that the LGBTQ community has gone through during the pandemic. Along the way, we want to explore personal stories and unique challenges and just get different thoughts and opinions on very important matters that include LGBTQ issues, HIV, COVID, faith, racial equity, how those things all collide. That's kind of what we're doing all year long. For this experience, we wanted to explore our friendship and especially what each of us went through as you were coming out with our friendship and our faith, and just kind of talk about that. So here we are.
That's so cool. I love that your organization is mindful of the weaving that happens with our health.
Yeah.
That it's not just physical. It's always interwoven with our identity and our faith and all these other things. So I'm so glad that you're including all of those parts of the conversation.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
It's been so exciting and educational for me because I'm still very much in that self-educating phase of all of these issues. So, and we'll get to talk about that today.
So yo, me too, though. So that's fine. It'll be a long phase.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes, I can see that. Now that I'm actively in it, there's just so much. Every time I turn the corner, I feel like I'm learning something new, and it's very eye-opening, and it's been a good experience. So,
where do we start?
Let's introduce our friendship.
Okay.
I suppose.
Yeah.
We met almost 12 years ago as freshmen on BYU campus.
Wow. Yep.
Joining the Freshman Service Corps.
Mm-hmm.
So,
true.
That was the beginning of our friendship and serving together. And
then we lived together.
Lived together. We roomed together for a while and
got through dating and stuff.
Got through dating and had so many conversations about faith and growth.
Mm-hmm.
And developed a very, very close bond.
Yeah.
I've considered you to be one of my best friends for a long time.
Same.
Even had you at my first child's birth.
I'm so honored. Always. That was always such an honor.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess that's where it started.
Mm-hmm. That is where it started. And what's interesting, and this is like the case in a lot of my friendships, like our foundation was like faith and service and like connecting on the things we were going through.
Yeah.
But like sexuality wasn't on my radar. I mean, I didn't come out till 26, like way after college.
Yeah.
And then like race kind of also stayed pretty quiet until like it was even before George Floyd. That was a big one, but there was also like Trayvon Martin. Like things just started happening.
And I remember when I was living at Wymount.
Mm-hmm.
One time we sat on our couch and we had a conversation about Black Lives Matters, and I had a lot of questions.
Yeah.
And confusion about, well, how is that different from All Lives Matter? And,
mm-hmm.
You know, we had conversations about that, and that was 4 or 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, I think all of our conversations about race were me learning about your family. And, mm-hmm. And we found out that I had done that dance thing with your dad. Like when I was like 16 and I had joined one of the performance groups, and there were different performance groups doing performing for different cultural dances. Mm-hmm. And your dad was the dance instructor for my group, and we didn't even know each other at all at that point.
Yeah. Cool connections.
Yeah. It was good. It was good.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the foundation of our friendship. Mm-hmm. Tell me about coming out, and specifically about your thoughts and feelings as you told different friends and family members.
Yeah, yeah. So I developed close relationships with people in the LGBTQ community my senior year at BYU. And I would hear them tell their own personal stories, and certain things would be like, oh, like that's, there's a word for that. Like that kind of sounds relatable, kind of a thing, but it would also just like go to the back of my mind until I moved away to DC. Like I said, I was like 25. I was meditating. I got my first like queer crush that I was conscious of, essentially. And so coming out to myself, thankfully, I think due to the fact that my family, I mean, spiritually, our foundation was always like, I always had a direct connection to the source, to God. And like this identity was not a conflict with that. It was very separate from any institution or religion. So thankfully, when I came out to myself, it was generally a wonderful thing. There were like questions about the future, and like uncertainty still creeps in, and there's still some spiraling that can happen. But thankfully, a friend told me I didn't have to relate to a label really quickly, so I didn't, and I was patient with myself. So when I moved back from DC, I told my family and siblings, and I don't know why I did it, but I did make a PowerPoint to kind of explain these terms.
I love that.
Yeah. And honestly, it was helpful, I think, for my siblings and my parents. So I made a little PowerPoint, explaining some terms that I resonated with, and I don't think it like really surprised them very much. And nothing like visibly or externally had changed yet. Like I wasn't dating or anything. So, it didn't start getting real probably, I don't know, until I started dating more. I have no idea. I don't know. It's hard to trace. It's funny. Yeah, go ahead.
What identification did you choose?
I came out as demisexual, and now I honestly just embrace queer because how my queerness seems to change. I'm on the asexual and aromantic spectrum. Demisexual's there. In relationships, I call myself a relationship sovereigntist. Like, there are so many words that I could confuse people with, so I just say queer. And that's the interesting thing is, like, I feel like in this community, we talk about how coming out is a completely ongoing process, whether it's your identity keeps evolving, whether it's you haven't told grandma yet, or you haven't told this friend, or it's just so ongoing. So for my 30th, I, like, wrote a blog post to kind of, like, tell the story a little bit more detail, and I'm sharing it with family and friends. And all the terms that I've cycled through and what I've settled on. And for me, like, that's been my favorite part of my coming out was that recent experience. And I'm glad that I wrote it to be better understood by family and friends. And I'm grateful that I had the opportunity to read it with a family member. Like, we went through it a number of weeks. We kept reading a different chapter and moving through it together, reading it together. And that was the best experience I could ask for. And I hope, like, I'm totally open to doing that with whoever wants to, but now I no longer need it. I think at the beginning I needed it, but now it's like, hey, if it happens, great, but I don't need to be understood anymore I feel like I can still find depth or create depth in my relationships, whether or not someone goes through that process with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Mm-hmm. I would like to read that.
You can. I'll share it with you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So tell me about your thoughts and feelings when you officially came out to me, when you sent the picture of you and Beth?
Let me try to go back. I think I had mixed feelings because even within my own family, I mean, nothing's real until you start dating someone, essentially. In a lot of people's hearts and minds, even my parents, it becomes like real all of a sudden. And so same thing for my friends. I knew that however you reacted, you would internally reflect. And when you were ready, you would come to talk to me. Like, I just knew how...
Oh, this is such, like, evidence of how good of friends we are that you perceived that. And, yeah, I mean, we'll be talking about some things that I haven't even talked about yet. Because I'm finally ready to talk about it. You know me so well.
Yeah. And I love that about you. I love that. And I love the things that you've admitted to me. Like, the things that you've shared are not things that people, like... always just say, like, so I appreciated the ways that you've been vulnerable and sharing the things that you question or don't understand quite yet or learning. So yeah, when I sent that picture, I knew that, like, wherever you were at, it would be cool and we would figure it out. So, and you were like, I really appreciated that invite to dinner. Like, when you were ready, inviting us both to dinner, that was big, Sammy. That meant a lot to me. That hasn't always happened in my friendship, so thank you for that.
That picture was really the start of my journey to embrace it. I remember when I got that picture, just a flood of grief and anger. Not even at you, not even at the fact that you were in a queer relationship, but because our friendship was so founded in the church. I was terrified. We had had so many conversations about the gospel and faith and God, and we had gone to the temple many times before, and there was just this sudden fear that the foundation of our friendship was being torn apart.
That's real. A lot of my friends feel that. Yeah.
Yeah. And just that realization, we wouldn't be able to go to the temple together. And... and it was really hard. And I was also battling just the socialization that I grew up with of the initial reaction of disgust seeing a queer couple together. And that happened. I was socialized to react that way if I saw two guys together, two girls together. And so then seeing my best friend wrapped in the arms of another woman and knowing what it meant was really hard for me. And I do remember, like, you know, obviously my desire for you to be happy was more than those things. It didn't take them away, but it was more than those things. So I do remember reaching out just saying, you know, congratulations, what's her name, tell me about her. But inside I was like, where's Camlin going? It was really hard. And after, I don't know, even after just a few days, that anger turned toward myself. And I knew I did not want to lose my best friend, and it was on me. That I had to change how I thought and how I perceived all of these things in order to continue being a best friend. Because I knew that I could... continue being a good, supportive friend. But the depth, in order to keep that depth, I had to change myself and feel comfortable. So I processed those things for several months and realized that one of the first things I had to do was honestly get over my initial reaction of disgust. Like, I had to become comfortable with seeing gay couples. And so I started watching Modern Family. And it is now one of my favorite shows. And I love Cam and Mitch so much. But that was one of my first steps. I was like, you know, comedy, show mm-hmm. with a gay couple mm-hmm. and started watching that and started to become more comfortable. And, but I just knew, I was like, I want to be able to invite my best friend over with her partner and not feel weird and not act weird. And I want my kids to not feel weird or act weird. And I want them to have a different upbringing than I did in that regard. And I mean, they know you.
Yeah. I love them.
They yep. And they love you. And so I wanted it to be something that there was comfort around. And so that was one of the first steps I took after processing and realizing it was on me. So it was a conscious decision to start watching that. And some other shows that had queer individuals and just honestly had to do exposure therapy to retrain my brain mm-hmm. in how it reacts. Mm-hmm. And so once I, yeah, during that process, at one point I was like, I miss Camlin and I need to talk to her. I don't know. It'd been several months mm-hmm. at least mm-hmm. since you had sent that picture, and I went over to your apartment, had breakfast with you.
Yeah.
And
we both got caught up because I hadn't been keeping up with what was going on in your life either.
Both
so
been busy. Life happens. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Life continues to go on while we're going through these changes. So, but I came over and I had to apologize for taking that long. And I knew you would understand, but again, there was just a piece of me that was like, I'm doing this to my friendship. I'm staying away because I'm uncomfortable. And I didn't want that to be the case anymore. Mm. We had a great conversation about faith and mm-hmm. and just recognizing that we're still friends again.
Yeah. And can I ask you, and you can decide if this is something like you want to keep as part of the interview or not. You can always decide that. But I found that I feel like some people feel like when they feel like to change their mind or their heart or the things that you were moving into is the same thing as betraying their God or their faith. Mm. I realized that during a presentation. Is that something that you feel like, did you feel that way? How did you overcome that? Did you not feel that way?
I don't feel that way. I think there was a little bit at first. I think it was more just confusion of how my belief that every individual is a child of God and is loved unconditionally, and that we are not judges and our commandment is to love unconditionally mm-hmm. fit in with, my belief in eternal families and the sacredness of procreation and mm-hmm. sexual interaction mm-hmm. And trying to figure out how those two truths, how those two realities can fit, and that maybe there was a piece that I was missing that allowed those two things to coexist, and or that maybe I didn't have the complete truth. So there just was a lot of confusion mm-hmm. more than anything. I mean, my degree from BYU is in family studies. Like, that's what I studied. And in many ways, it strengthened my faith and belief in the sacredness of families and specifically parenting and children and things like that. But on the other side, it also, ironically, is one of the most opening majors. I learned so much about, and maybe this is part of why I didn't feel so much betrayal as I started to explore this. But all of my professors, I mean, they study these issues, and it wasn't a discussion of right and wrong. It was a discussion of, this is the reality that so many people are going through, and this is hard, and we need to accept this as reality and, help improve lives and families, regardless of what our eternal beliefs are. So it was a very welcoming major that really did open my eyes, and it helped me even though I still had those initial feelings of disgust at seeing mm-hmm. couples together, which I don't anymore, thankfully, but mm-hmm. I did, even though I felt that, I also felt like, you know, it's people's lives and we shouldn't prejudice or persecute or anything. Like, we should love. Like, I knew that logically from my classes as well. So it was kind of a weird major to be in, because on one hand it was teaching eternal families from the perspective of the LDS church, and on the other hand it was teaching, well, this is the reality of families here on earth, and how do we navigate that and make it as positive of an experience for everybody. And so kind of was already starting to juggle those two things.
Interesting.
But yeah, when it was, you know, my best friend, it hit a lot closer to home, and it was like, oh, I actually have to figure this out. And I have been. I've been in a faith transition for the last several years. It really drew attention to a lot of organizational things that I've realized I disagree with, and I'm still trying to figure it out. I'm still trying to figure out what is it that I actually believe, and what do I subscribe to as far as organized religion goes, and the church, where do I fit in that? It has been a faith transition, and I think it's been a good thing. But yeah, it definitely has been a challenge to figure that out.
Of course, because it's still mixed in with your identity. It's a lot.
Yeah, it is.
For sure.
It is. Yeah, so talk to me about your faith transition. I remember at that breakfast I asked you, that was one of the things I asked you, was, so what do you consider yourself to be, or what do you believe now? Mm-hmm. And you said interfaith, and how you still believe in many of the things that you were taught, but you also believe in a lot of other things. So talk to me about that.
Yeah. I'll again repeat that my family culture always put our direct connection to God first. So even though in like church classes or things like that, sometimes even subconsciously or cultural messages about how putting either a book or a person or something to trust something else more was sometimes taught, I think the thing that won out was, oh, I have a direct connection. So I'm grateful that I had that. And I think it was when my senior year, a lot of things happened. So my senior year, I kind of had a mental and emotional breakdown, and that can spiritually open you up.
Yeah.
Because what that did was it really shifted the priorities and the expectations again to health. What is healing right now? I also started meditating more. I also started searching for what is a set of principles that we can all live by that transcends religion even? What's something that's unifying versus divisive?
Yeah.
And so I found some mindfulness communities or teachings of like Thich Nhat Hanh, who recently passed away, people who have been involved both in social justice and faith, because that's another thing that I was missing in my church experience. Like, things would be happening out on the streets and like we would not be talking about it or tying our faith to it.
Yeah.
Or if we did, it was in a very unhealthy, backwards, biased way.
Yeah.
So I really respected leaders that would find ways to unify and then to find principles we could all get behind. I found a community of women who were also working on their traumas. They were working on their inner, trusting their inner voice.
Yeah.
Which, well, I think whenever anyone, I think, starts to do that work, I think it gives them a spiritual foundation that I feel is very, I mean, sovereignty is a big word. It's something that I think gives them a good foundation to stand on, that makes them more compassionate towards themselves and others. So that community of women was really helpful for me. And so I will say mindfulness, women, and queerness, all of that really opened up my spiritual world quite a lot. And I think I'm even leaning more towards like omnitheist now, as in like I can now like find and see God in all things.
Yeah.
which was always true, but now it's something that I'm holding to even more than... I'm still interfaith, but I like going to something even beyond faith, even beyond religion.
These are things that, like, I wanted to talk more about. I mean, we used to Marco Polo all the time about, faith questions, mm-hmm. I guess would be the better way to put it. But we'd talk about what we had read or something we had heard.
And,
we haven't talked as much.
True.
I think we've both just been busy, but mm-hmm. I know that for a while, part of it was me just being unsure of how we can continue talking about it. But this is good.
Yeah,
this
we
is...
can totally still Marco Polo for sure. And like, cause some of the things like I'm grateful for, like I still love reading spiritual texts and things like that. What that looks like will shift.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a book by an Indigenous person this month. Maybe it's Glennon Doyle in another month. Maybe it's, Buddhism in another month. So I still like temples, even I'm totally fine on temple grounds, like, because I'll turn it into a meditative space, or I'll go into the mountains. So like a lot of the practices are still present. I just no longer box what the form needs to look like. So
okay, let's shift a little bit
mm-hmm.
To a bit more of an educational space.
Sure.
I want to hear from you the challenges that you've seen in the LGBTQ community during the pandemic. Let's talk about HIV and COVID. I know that seeing the rapid progression for vaccines for COVID has been very difficult for many people in the LGBTQ community who deal with HIV,
mm-hmm.
Who have been struggling to get a vaccine
mm-hmm.
for decades. And it's just been a challenge, I know, for a lot of people, but I kind of want to hear from you. I'm still entering this world. I'm not as far into it as you are. So I want to hear from you. What have you seen during this pandemic that specifically affects the LGBTQ community?
I'll say that even the things that I see is also limited. 'Cause I'm in a high school with younger kids here at Encircle. I mostly work with high school kids, parents, educators as well. So I see what happens in their experiences. And I saw a number of things. I saw how difficult education became, whether it's we were isolated and separated from one another, maybe their home experiences were not supportive. And that's a really challenging thing for LGBTQ teens who either don't feel safe communicating with their parents, don't feel listened to when they do. Of course, access to mental health, like, is a huge need for all of us, but especially in this community, needing access, needing to be able to afford it. Some teens are seeing therapists that they don't even like, but their parents like them, so that's not effective. So there's great need for us to unbox how we educate, unbox our education system, make our schools a lot safer. Oh, I can't stand hearing stories about either bullying or things happening and no adults doing anything.
Yeah.
And I also don't like seeing, again, this divide between LGBTQ youth and their parents, who they should hopefully be closer to or trusting more. I think disseminating knowledge is also a need that we saw with this pandemic. Especially with our more multicultural communities, then being able to access accurate information at a good rate of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's a lot. Hopefully, I'm hoping what we're seeing now is like, okay, these are all things that we need to fix. Like, here's our attention. Let's evolve this. So.
Yeah. Well, one thing that HVTN has noticed, like you said, is the mm-hmm. dissemination of information.
Mm-hmm.
About COVID, about HIV, about mental health, about how to create those safe environments in home and school, and that all of those things have been incredibly challenging. And so that's one of their purposes, is to help
awesome.
Get that information out. So, in fact, for any listeners or viewers today, we are going to include a link or a QR code that you can access to take a 5-minute survey, just asking what you know about HIV and COVID and its similarities and differences. We're trying to gather that information so we can provide accurate information in a better way. So if you get a chance, please take that survey.
Awesome.
We would appreciate it.
I think another thing that I'm seeing, I keep going back to parents, but it's all about like education, things that we're afraid or nervous to talk about, whether it is sex education, HIV, things like that, whether it is mental health. Some don't want to acknowledge, like, my child might have a mental health crisis, or they might be thinking about suicide.
Yeah.
Acknowledging that, yes, statistically, like, you might end up with an LGBTQ child. A lot of these things, anything that we don't like to talk about, can become a crisis later. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me more about what you do with Encircle.
Yeah, I'm community engagement manager in Encircle Provo. So I do a lot of things. I'm at the home a couple times a week or a few times a week so I can stay connected to what's happening here or support events. I'll help plan a number of our events, especially any event that takes us out into the community, whether it's our Rainbow Brunches or Rainbow Mutual or adult socials. I will also go out into the community, so I'll visit schools, and I can either tell them what Encircle does, I can do a little more educational depth and talk about this community and how to work with them.
Have you noticed that some schools are more receptive than others?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. some districts, yes.
What's that like when you bring that service to a district or a school that isn't receptive? How does that end up playing out?
It just makes me reflective, like, okay, what is the best way to approach this community or reach them? I'm actually working with a director of family programs, Donna. So we're working on a presentation to reach parents that maybe are a bit more hesitant to approach these topics. All it does is make me reflect, like, okay, what's the concern here? How do we need to change our approach?
Yeah.
But it concerns me because then I'll again hear stories of kids that come from that school here at Encircle and it's not good. Like, it makes me really worried. So
even before I actively started on my journey to educate myself and become comfortable, something that has always been so confusing to me is, I don't know how cruel people can be. Like, even though I grew up being uncomfortable with it, I was also raised to be kind to others and respectful to others. And so even though there was this level of discomfort that I know, certain things I said or did were probably microaggressions without me realizing it. But actively being cruel, it makes
wild.
No sense to me at all.
Yep. It makes me want to get creative. Whether it's creating conferences or gathering stories, because I think if people heard these stories more often, like, hopefully it would light some fires and get us active.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the thing. People don't understand, like, the spectrum of what goes on. Like, it's not just words.
Mm-hmm.
Some students are pushing supportive people downstairs. Some people are calling people out in the lunchroom in front of everyone. Like, there's really bad stuff happening too, unfortunately.
It just makes my heart break.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Mm-hmm.
It really is awful.
Yeah.
I think it's also been difficult for me seeing all the things happening on BYU campus. Granted, I have never been the kind of person that was like, this is the Lord's university, it's the best place on earth. Believed it's a pretty good school for education.
Mm-hmm.
Not perfect. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the beard policy and stuff like that was like, this school is so outdated. some things have got to change, but I was very disconnected from the deeper cultural issues that need to change on campus. But over the last year or two, just starting to recognize and understand how unsafe so many people have felt.
Yeah.
It's been heartbreaking to know that a place that I was in school there for nearly 10 years, mm-hmm. Spent 10 years on campus and was totally oblivious mm-hmm. to the pain that people were going through, the heartache that they were going through. And,
yeah,
it's crazy.
Yet at the same time, like, there's really, really good things happening too.
Yeah. It's still a good school for education. There's just things that have to change.
Student groups that are being created. I really love the back to school events that are being planned. Some good stuff. Yeah.
But change is slow.
Yeah. It's not fast enough, not widespread enough. Yeah.
I mean, even with our friendship, like this conversation is a big stepping stone, I think, for us in mm-hmm. progressing our friendship. And it's a year and a half, almost, about. I think it was like around November, sometime in November, that you sent me the picture of you and Beth. And about a year and a half to get to this point. Mm-hmm. So personal change takes a long time. And I think personal change oftentimes happens faster than social change. And then once we do change, then we start to feel frustrated that society isn't catching up as fast.
Right.
But
I love, like, the personal change is what's most important to me.
Yeah.
I think I'm over band-aid change or social change that doesn't have a foundation or a root in individuals. So
yeah,
it's important.
Band-aid change doesn't actually change anything. It just hides. Hides things.
Yeah.
And that base level foundational changes, it can be painful. Mm-hmm. So what else? Do you have any thoughts, any additional thoughts or questions before we wrap this up today?
Well, just things I've thought about when it comes to these health issues that you were mentioning, like kind of what it takes. Even as a high school teacher, I was teaching a class, like a health class, because our health teacher took another position, and I knew that, like, I didn't have all the resources to teach these things. So I would invite health professionals in the community to come and talk to my students. And the conversations that happened were beautiful. And the education that happened, like, they appreciated knowing this information, whether it was sexually transmitted diseases, sex ed, relationships, all of these things. I think sometimes we're nervous to give too much information to youth.
Yeah.
But they can handle it. They need it. As long as we have a practice of communicating mm-hmm. when something is hard to understand, I think we can work through it together. So.
Well, and that's one of the myths that was busted in several of my family life classes at BYU, was this idea that withholding information protects children and youth, and it doesn't at all. One of the things that I've become very passionate about is healthy sexuality, and regardless of what your sexual identity is, like, realizing, like, I had a lot of problems because of the no, go, attitude around sex mm-hmm. in marriage in the LDS community. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It's really hard when you are given no information and then you're told to go and have sex, but mm-hmm. don't talk to anybody about it. Mm-hmm. Very, very challenging. So that's something I've become very comfortable with, is talking about sexuality, healthy sexuality, and sex ed. But that was one of the things that was talked about often in class, is you need to provide information, and research clearly shows that the more accurate information children and youth are given at age appropriate levels, the better off they'll be, the more likely they are to make wise choices, to get help if something goes wrong. And yes, there is an age appropriate level for different topics, but I think even that we're still trying to figure out what that is and realizing that we can go younger and younger with certain information, and that it's better for children and youth to learn that information. But yeah, as I've gotten more involved with HVTN, hearing some stories about young teenagers who think that they may have HIV, and are told by professionals in the field that they don't qualify for a test, or different, I'm still learning about it, so I don't have a lot of super accurate information yet, but I just have heard stories that it's very difficult to get the appropriate care. That treatment, when started early enough, can be very effective, but a lot of people aren't given that care early enough because of the lack of information, the lack of education, and the continued prejudice in the medical field. So that's something that HVTN is determined to help move that field forward, and we're really hoping that this experience with COVID specifically, you know, seeing how quickly the world stepped up to create a vaccine to address that issue and save lives, really hoping that that can translate, that when enough people have that education and recognize that we've been working on a vaccine for HIV for decades, but the progress has been so slow because of the lack of support. That hopefully that progress can go a little faster after this pandemic. So,
yeah.
Well, this has been fabulous. I have absolutely loved talking to you, and I'm excited for a little bit of our story, our friendship story, to be shared, because it just, like you said, you know, a lot of your friends have felt similar to the way I did at the beginning, and I think it's important for people to be able to talk about it and not feel guilt or shame. There was a period of time where I was just very angry at myself and ashamed that I could feel so many negative things surrounding my best friend when you didn't do anything to deserve those feelings at all. So I really hope people can hear this, can hear your side, and gain hope as they find the right time and the right way to come out to their friends and family. Learn from you and your example and just personal inner peace, and recognizing that, you know, other people's reactions are their own. Like, wow, like, you are just so incredible.
Thanks.
And then hearing my side, just, it's okay that it takes time to figure things out, and that you can still create a positive friendship as you're going through that transition. So thank you so much for allowing me to be here.
I'm excited for what comes next for the rest of your conversations this year.
I know, it'll be exciting. I'm excited. And again, for listeners and followers, please click that link, take that survey. We'd really appreciate your input on that.